It took me a good 30 seconds to figure out what that song even was.
Uh-huh.
Welcome to Linoleum Knife.
Because you probably know the cover.
Maybe. This is Linoleum Knife, a podcast about films with 20% more listeners than ever before. I'm Liberty Valance. You are Miss Seeley's pants.
I don't even know where that's coming from.
I don't either.
Oh, God.
I'm Dave White of Movies.com, and you are Alonzo Duralde of TheRap.com, and also What the Flick. And this is Linoleum Knife.
It sure is. A couple of firsts happening this week. This is the first show being recorded on my brand new laptop, which we're super excited about. And this is also our first location recording.
That's right.
We have left the house and are in another house.
We're in another house.
Our friends Robert and Margie were kind enough to invite us to their Culver City bungalow, because they wanted to see how it all... Well, Robert's been on the show before. Listeners who paid attention will remember Robert Abley of the Los Angeles Times and author of various and sundry books about movies on this program. And he and his wife, Margie, had us to their house. And so here we are, taking it on the road. Woo!
Also, I made a tortilla de patata.
You did, and it was real... It was a big hit. It was real good.
Tell our listeners who are not Spanish, what is a tortilla de patata?
It is a potato omelet, and it is a staple of the Castilian diet. Back in the day, you know, maybe even now, like, you know, women would make a potato omelet in the morning, wrap it up, send it with their husbands off to work, and then, you know, by the time they, you know, had their lunch in the afternoon, it was still a little warm, but it didn't matter because it was delicious, and it's potato and onion and egg, and it's great.
Did I hear you say they would wrap it in newspaper?
I could be wrong about that. I'm not going to commit to that.
Because that just seems gross.
That's probably, I could be getting that wrong, but you never know. It's not out of the question. We're talking...
Especially olden times newspapers with those, like, inks that are completely toxic.
Look, from what I was told...
That's why people used to die younger.
Well, maybe so, but I was always told that people used to wipe their derrières with the... with El ABC, which was the...
What's that?
The right-wing newspaper in Spain that was printed on very sort of thin onion skin kind of paper.
And people would buy it just to wipe their butts?
Well, maybe they'd read it first. It's like that joke about coffee filters and the heat. It's a dual purpose thing.
Is that where Kiss My Black Ass came from?
I don't know. Kiss My Newsprinty Bottom. I don't know.
So,
Our opening song, I just want to point out real quick, that was the original version of Nathan Jones, done by the post Diana Ross Supremes.
Well, who did the cover?
I want to say, all the kids in East California, with the Kim Wilde, I want to say, but I could be wrong.
Kim Wilde.
There
was a cover version by Kim Wilde.
Well, she covered some other Supreme song, didn't she?
I don't know.
Bananarama, maybe? Bananarama covered Nathan Jones.
I don't know.
Yeah, anyway.
I don't know anything.
It came up recently because it turns out I have a Facebook friend named Nathan Jones.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, when I wish him happy birthday, I said, I will spare you the song. I'm sure you are sick of it by now. And we had a brief conversation about
it. And was he sick of it already in his life?
Wouldn't you be?
I think by this point, if your name is Nathan Jones, people are not really coming to you with that joke unless they're old.
Right. But I'm sure in its moment he heard it plenty, you know.
Yeah.
That was... My older brother Fernando had that single, and because he was a big Supremes fan, and yes, I know. I would say my brother Fernando got all the gay except for the gay. he's a straight guy, but he dresses better than I ever will.
He likes all the gay things that you don't.
Yeah, I
know
could not,
very much. About.
I could not handicraft to save my life, and his needlepoint will bring you to tears.
Yeah, he's a good needlepointer. I've seen all the stuff at their house.
Anyway, I remember when I was 4 years old, the one day in pre-kindergarten, they told us we could bring in records from home. So everybody else brought in these sort of like, you know, readings of fairy tale albums or, you know, whatever kind of dopey stuff. I brought in the Supremes.
Yeah, okay. That's
The other 4-year-olds were not digging it.
Of course they weren't. Robert Abley's phone just pointed out the fact that it was indeed Bananarama.
Okay.
who recorded a cover of Nathan Jones.
Right. Thank you, Robert Sloan. But Kim Wilde did some Supremes cover.
I don't like,
I'm
care
not completely,
what
but
she did.
You're looking at me like I'm a crazy person. And I just, this is coming from somewhere.
I want to get back to talking about us.
Okay.
And please. How we are 20% more famous than we were last week.
Yeah, it's staggering. I don't want to get into the hard numbers here, but yeah.
We had 20 listeners, and now we have 24. That is a 20% increase in listenership. So, all of that sexting has paid off.
No, it is. I think a lot of it has been word of mouth.
And we'll keep doing it.
Our listeners are great about retweeting us and re-Facebooking us. And telling their friends to check this nutty show out and texting their friends about how we have long conversations about whether Glee or Katy Perry is better at singing Glee songs.
We did lose a listener this week, though.
Really?
I heard someone say on the internet that they don't like the way I sound.
What?
They hate my voice.
They crazy.
They're gone because of me.
Everybody
it's
loves
my
your
fault.
Everybody
no
loves your voice.
No, to someone who's no longer listening.
When Dave White talked, everybody cried.
Yeah, but this person cried a lot and didn't want to hear me anymore.
His loss. His or her loss.
I'm that abrasive something. Like, I am...
Wasn't there some like a dog that couldn't stand the sound of Julia Roberts' voice?
I am probably. I am Fran Drescher. To this person.
You're the black metal.
Whoever's gone. Whoever's gone now didn't like me.
No, we got a ton more listeners, which is very exciting. I think a big chunk of it has to do with Mr. Jack Morrissey and the Team Jack podcast.
You figure?
I think I got a lot of response from folks, new listeners who had not heard of us before and would check us out, so we thank him for that. Speaking of other podcasts, by the way, check out this week's bonus episode of the B-Movies podcast.
Oh yeah, we're on it.
Dave and I appeared this week and we talked about our favorite films of the decade to date.
Well, mine are more than just favorites. Mine are the objective best.
Okay. Thank you for that. Anyway, so it's a very fascinating conversation. Only one movie made all four lists. You'll have to tune in to find out which one. You can also find out which movie managed to beat the Turin horse on Dave's list. And which movie, apparently, as I discovered while recording, makes me cry just to talk about it. So, yeah, you don't want to miss that.
You know what's funny right now?
What's that?
Your glasses are fogging up, and you're just sitting in a house.
It's a little warm in here.
No, it's not.
For me, it is.
You're weird.
You're weird.
It looks great. I wish there was a picture that we could take of this. This is why we need a YouTube channel when linoleumknife.com
so people
happens
could watch my glasses fog up.
Watch
that's
your glasses
riveting.
Margie wants to take a picture. He just wiped them clean. Can't do anything
they
about
may,
it now.
They may do it again.
Yeah.
But if you want to get a shot of all this happening, we can post it on the Facebook.
Another exciting thing happened this week.
What's that?
Someone on the internet referred to me as Hunty for the first time.
What is Hunty?
Well, apparently,
or does that rhyme with something?
It's no. Hunty is a word. It's kind of a drag queen term of affection.
Really?
It's a cross between honey.
Oh, okay. So it does rhyme with something. Okay.
That other word, and I felt like I had been jumped in to like the House of Labasia.
Well, there you go.
And it's a good feeling to be called Hunty.
Shoot an arrow in the sky.
Exactly.
See where it lands.
Flies high.
But good for you.
Good for you. All right, we're going to start talking about movies.
Oh, why not?
Start talking about The Lone Ranger, because that's the one that everyone's talking about the most.
God. Yeah.
You okay. Tell them what happens in The Lone Ranger.
Oh, so many things happen in The Lone Ranger, and yet none of them are very interesting. Okay, so it is a reboot of the 80-year-old radio and then television series about The Lone Ranger and his trusty, what was once called his trusty Indian companion.
Really?
That was how he was described, yes.
What do they call Tonto now? Just Tonto.
Yeah, there's no narrator in this one, so he hasn't introduced as anything.
Yeah, there is no
narrator. So the movie begins in 1933, which is apparently the year that the radio show began.
I see.
In San Francisco, and a little kid dressed as the Lone Ranger wanders into a carnival sideshow that has like a Wild West Museum, and there's a stuffed bear and a stuffed something else, and then the Native American is not stuffed. It is Johnny Depp wearing old age makeup, and
right.
He begins to tell the very, very, very long story of the Lone Ranger to this child. who's actually the kid who played Eddie Munster in the Mockingbird Lane reboot on PC. So it's an origin story. Yippee.
It's Little Big Man, it sounds like.
What now?
Little Big Man?
There's some Little Big Man moments for sure between Johnny Depp's old age makeup and Barry Pepper shows up later looking exactly like George Custer. And basically channeling Richard Mulligan's performance. He's a lawyer and he comes back to the untamed Texas West and the railroad is coming through and the Indians are being slaughtered and the brother who is the ranger is with the woman who really loved the lawyer and then the lawyer must put the
mask on.
Say
it better, say it right, okay, say it in an explaining kind of way.
Armie Hammer plays John Reed and he travels back to Texas and he's very much literally a fancy pants city slicker. People go out of their way to tell him what a nice suit he's wearing.
Yes.
And so...
somewhat mockingly.
Right.
Yeah.
Also on the train with him is the nefarious criminal Butch Cavendish, who has a habit of eating the hearts of his enemies.
Which is rad.
Yeah, in a PG-13 movie. And Tonto, who has been chasing him down because Tonto believes that he's not just an outlaw, that he is the Wendigo, a beast that will throw nature out of balance. And
Wendigo or Wendigo?
They keep saying Wendigo, but Wendigo is the word that I know from Marvel Comics and whatnot. So Cavendish escapes and Reed puts together a posse to go get him and he deputizes John Reed even though he's wearing a big white hat and is kind of a doof. And one of the people in their party is a mole and betrays them and they all get shot at and they all die. But then apparently John Reed comes back and so there's this spiritual horse that takes you to the other side and he shows up and so Tonto assumes that this means that John Reed is a death walker, a wind walker,
spirit walker.
I wish I were making this up. So even though he thinks that the brother, who is the Texas Ranger, would be the better person to help him go after Cavendish, he's stuck with the fancy pants lawyer. He brings him back to life, he puts the mask on, and they ride around, thing, railroad, off-screen genocide, wife, the evil...
You're leaving out the best parts.
Oh, well, then you tell it.
Here are the best parts. The best parts are every 20 minutes, there will be like an 8-minute action sequence. Mm-hmm. Someone's being chased, or someone's being fighting. And
it's filmed in Gore Verbinski Confuso-vision.
Yeah, and because Gore Verbinski is the director, and if you go all the way back to Mouse Hunt, which, you know, really shows his obsession with the board game Mousetrap.
He's Rube Goldberg for the modern era.
All the action sequences are those great, convoluted, you know, this... fell off a ledge and it hit this thing that went rolling and then it knocked this out of place.
And then the bullet ricochets out of 8 different surfaces.
Spinning and this thing starts spinning around. And then it bonks Johnny Depp in the head and Johnny Depp goes flying like boom, seat of his pants. It's like some, you know, like a Three Stooges sort of moment where someone's actually like flying while sitting, you know, and then then Johnny Depp lands on a horse and rides backwards and then the horse jumps over it's like there's a million...
You're making it sound way more fun than it is.
But those action sequences are the only thing that's fun about the movie, and if you like that kind of stuff, then you might, you know, want to go see it just to watch the stuff. But here's the problem. In between those action sequences, people sit around and talk about the old Western times for like 15 minutes at a spell. And they're, you know, conniving against one another, and Johnny Depp is rolling his eyes, and no matter where the Lone Ranger goes, someone walks in and says, What's with the mask?
Ah, ha, ha! Clarity. And this movie, you can feel it patting itself on its back because it's a big Western, but it's from the point of view of how, like, greedy white men came in and ruined everything. And I'm thinking, you know, Heaven's Gate was 33 years ago. Like, this ground has been covered. You are not... you know, yes, Disney's doing it now, and it's doing it for kids, but this is not new. Like, we've seen revisionist Westerns for decades now. I mean, even back in the 70s and even the 60s, you know. So this is, it's not breaking any new ground there. So people who are having hosannas over that, it's like,
Are there people hosanna?
Yes,
hosanna-ing
yes,
over
are.
There?
You know, they,
big names.
Well, no, I'm not getting into it. But there is a...
I'm kind of hosanna-ing over the fact that your glasses are fogging up again.
There's a small... Shut up.
It isn't doing it exactly enough yet to get a good picture yet, Marty. This is, wait until it fogs up.
This is
more.
One of my great excuses to not exercise. Like, if I went to a gym or something, I'd have to deal with the fogging glasses all the time. But no, there's a small contingent of film critics who have decided that everybody who didn't like The Lone Ranger is only doing it because they bought in too much to the pre-release hype about how much it costs.
Was there pre-release hype?
Some, I guess. And that really this is a subversive film with ideas and blah, 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 blah. And this thing's a mess. It is a mess. And it culminates with the typical messy Gore Verbinski finale where there's 80 things going on and you don't know where anybody is in relation to anybody else. And it's just this big clanky machine of nothing. And on top of it, you've got Johnny Depp, who for all his, I'm an eighth Cherokee or whatever claims, is basically doing red face. Like, it would have been an interesting, if they wanted it to be subversive, in the flashback to Tonto's childhood, he'd have been a white kid who somehow got raised by the natives because, you know, his parents died in the wagon train or something. But no. Little actual Native American kid somehow grows up to be Johnny Depp covered in, you know, white nurse shoe polish, you know, on his face.
What I found weird about Johnny Depp's performance was his relationship to English.
Right, and to pronouns.
As a former ESL teacher, I can tell you that language acquisition does not progress that way. You do not speak, you know, this perfectly elegant, you know, and complicated
sentence.
And then something like, you know, when you were in your spirit walk, her ghost came to you and touched your soul, and subsequently you blah blah blah. I mean, like, he says things like that,
right?
Like, he's reading it from a book, and then 5 minutes later a horse falls down and he points to the horse and goes, "Horse dead." And I'm like, oh, what did you just forget how to talk? I mean, pronouns are for, you know, the verb, the infinitive to be is, you know, the tool of the white devil. I don't know why he's behaving this way, and I don't know that the movie cared enough to keep him consistent.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't matter what ethnic heritage Johnny Depp actually is, this is a weirdly stereotypically, you know, at one point in the film someone calls him a crazy Indian. And that's kind of what the movie treats him like. So, but getting back to the thing you're saying about the, you know, critical backlash to the negative reception.
Uh-huh.
I don't care. I do not care. And I...
Well, I feel like I have to defend genuinely not liking this movie now.
No, you don't.
And not that I'm some tool of the, you know, internet propaganda.
You do not have to justify a damn thing, and here's why. Nothing you do will ever be right. If you are a film critic, if they're your job, if your biggest gig in your writing career is being a film critic, you are doomed in terms of perception on the part of almost everybody.
True.
You know, I mean, there are film critic groupies out there, you know, God bless all of you, but everybody else thinks that, you know, our lives are sitting around eating bonbons and taking big giant craps on things for sport. Unless
we are, you know, liking something,
in which case we're
shills or we're suckers.
If you like a big summer movie, here's why you can't win. If you like a big summer movie, you're a sucker. Mm-hmm. If you hate a big summer movie, you're just being negative for the sake of it.
And you don't know what fun is.
You don't know what fun is. If you wind up liking something that comes out in November that is, you know, hoping to get some awards, mm-hmm. then you're doing your job, but the people who made the movie are just sort of like, ah, good for marketing.
Right, you know, and your readers nothing, are like, oh, you're a stuffed shirt of just like yeah, those Oscar
nothing
movies.
You do is good enough right. or worth, you know, giving you the credit for having thoughts in your own head. And so anybody who comes to me and says to me, well, you only disliked The Lone Ranger because you listened to advanced pre-release hype is stupid, and here's why. I don't pay any attention to pre-release hype. Occasionally I'll hear things, oh, I hear this is not very good, but it never affects me when I'm walking in the movie. It never affects me when I walk in and say, I'd say to myself, okay, here I am at The Lone Ranger. I hear it's terrible. I can't wait.
Well, there were people that
tear it up.
World War Z, that was a movie that had a lot of bad pre-advanced hype, but ended up being, I mean, critics, for the most part, were kind to it. They were like, and I thought it was totally fine. I had a good time.
I mean, it was a troubled production, but my problems with it, I don't think, had nothing to do with its scale or scope. It was just more of a question of, you know, could I have a human being character in this movie that I could give two craps about, please?
Furthermore, it is not a matter of consensus. The idea that somehow we're all consulting one another,
right?
Coming up with a consensus on this sort of thing and then going off to write our reviews is also ridiculous. And any critic who propagates that notion is a liar.
Yeah.
And so
sit in on any meeting of the Los Angeles Film Critics Association sometime if you think that any of us have an agenda or can agree on anything.
The closest I get to being influenced by anybody is when I'm talking to you about something as we're driving home from the screening, and we sit there and we start telling each other things and we start being possessive about our ideas. Like, you'll say something and I'll think that's funny and you'll go, and you can't have that. That's how that, you want to know how it works? If you say something out loud to somebody and you only say it out loud to your spouse and your spouse happens to do the same thing for a living that you do, your first words after that thing is, you can't have that. It's mine.
Robert.
Yeah, well, I do feel like the critical huzzas for Fast and Furious 6 were a case of critics jumping on a bandwagon too late to recognize when a movie actually wasn't good. I mean, I thought the good Fast and Furious was the last one, 5, but that was the fun one.
Yeah.
And this is a case of critics like catching up late to what audiences have been into for a while now.
Yes.
And you saw these great reviews for 6, and 6 really was pretty stupid. I mean,
it was incredibly stupid.
I enjoyed 6 a lot, but five is better, and I said so at the time.
Gonzo fun. 5 was.
I love 6. I love it. I loved 6. I've seen it twice, and it's a delightfully stupid movie that I would watch a third time if someone put it in front of me.
Especially at the drive-in.
It is the box of Twinkies that I have not been allowed to eat since Hostess went under, and I want that box of Twinkies. I know it's not food, but I want to eat it. And so that's how I feel. I mean, specifically about that film. But I'm talking about this whole idea
there's a hive mind.
That there's a hive mind, and when in reality, I work alone. I work alone at my desk.
In the shadows.
You know, I don't ask anyone, what should I say about movie man? You know?
Right.
It's absurd that would happen.
Getting back to Lone Ranger, the other thing I want to talk about is the movie seems to have a weird ambivalence about its own titular character. Like, it simultaneously
absolutely
tries to, like, sort of take the piss and mock him and make him out to be kind of a buffoon who stumbles into becoming heroic, and at the same time is trying to sell him in a very straightforward manner as a Western hero and, you know, franchise tentpole.
And do get the Western hero aspect of him in the last 15 minutes.
2-plus hours in, you finally get the Rossini, and you finally get the horse rearing back, and you're like, yes, it's a Lone Ranger movie! I've been waiting for that! And, oh no, now we're back to the Gore Verbinski big finale, and I don't know what's going on. So I literally got about 45 seconds of arm hair tingling pleasure out of it being the Lone Ranger, and then we were back to business as usual.
I believe it is a terrible film with some cool mechanical action sequences that I enjoyed looking at. Because I do appreciate that Rube Goldberg stuff. I think it's fun to watch. And so It doesn't mean anything. It's not about anything.
I mean, I agree with you in theory, but I don't think that Verbinski does it very well.
There's no way to discuss this film in any sort of larger context other than as an example of what products look like now.
Sure.
And so the only way to talk about it is in the good or bad thumb up, thumb down way, which is incredibly reductive, but some movies sort of force that upon you.
Right.
and this is one of them.
You know, I mean, I would have been perfectly happy for this to be a big, dumb action movie if they'd wanted to. You know, Fast 6, White House Down, I had a great time at both of them. And as ridiculous as they are, when the action starts happening and things rev up, I'm ducking in my seat, and I'm getting that flutter in my chest of like, you know. And in this movie, it was a process of watching and thinking, well, okay, yeah, there's two trains chasing each other.
I felt more actual emotion, real live emotion, watching Fast 6 than I did watching this or any other thing. Because, and I'll just say it now because it's been out for 6 weeks now.
No, sure.
When Giselle dies, I gasp.
Yeah, no, I know. That's your Titanic moment we talked about.
That's my Titanic. I was super actually sad.
No!
She sacrifices herself for him.
Yes.
And
only to have him die a couple scenes later.
Only to have him die a few minutes later in Tokyo racing against Lucas Black that you don't see. I was very sad.
Yeah.
It makes me very sad that Giselle is dead.
Yeah,
Han loved her so much.
I had more of an emotional investment in their relationship than I did in anybody in the Lone Ranger. That's for sure.
Actually.
So, yeah, P.U. Lone Ranger, and apparently, word is, from what I've been reading today on the wrap, that Disney has another John Carter on its hands. So,
oh well. I liked John Carter. I super liked John Carter. Like, I was, and Robert Averly has given me a thumb up on that.
Yeah, that
I
was, I'll tell you,
loved John
eccentric,
Carter.
Eccentric, like, legitimately eccentric, like, you don't know what's going to happen kind of movie.
I actually got a little excited about John Carter because there was that fan-created trailer where they actually took all the footage they could get, all the EPK stuff, and made a much better trailer than the Disney one. I was like, okay, this movie I want to see. And then I saw it, and I was like, my big problem with John Carter, apart from the one alien with the broken tusk who you knew was the bad guy, couldn't tell any of them apart. I know that's speciesist of me, but I could not distinguish any of them. So,
racist.
Exactly. Racist.
Yeah.
All right, moving
Despicable
on.
Me Too.
Despicable Me Too. You explain this one.
Gru is no longer of an evil villain. He is the loving and caring adoptive father of three little girls. He, to fill his days, he is an artisanal jams and jellies entrepreneur, and he does that in the basement with his old scientist pal, who leaves because he's tired of making jams and jellies. He wants to be evil again.
Dr. Nefario.
But Gru is a dad, and he's nice now,
mm-hmm.
Which means they've undespicabilized him.
Right.
And he has to have some sort of function. Along comes Kristen Wiig as an agent of the Anti-Villain League, and they recruit him. Well, literally, they kidnap him and make him come and help them catch a villain who has created a serum that turns living creatures, bunnies, the minions, into snarling, hungry purple monsters.
Right.
They go undercover at a mall to catch the new villain. Stuff happens. They catch him. The end. This is the movie about the minions.
Not enough.
There's a lot more minions this time around, and they are setting the groundwork for the movie that is going to be called Minions, that's going to come out at the end of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
I was pleased that they filled the space with something funny, because when you don't have Steve Carell as Gru saying cruel things to children,
right,
which was a lot of the real fun of the first one, telling them that, you know, monsters were coming after them in their sleep and stuff. When you don't have that, you need the minions, because the minions are the great comic relief in the film. They're the, you know, this French inflected gibberish speaking little
walking ids,
little lemons, essentially, yeah, is what they are. And they're terrific. And if there's going to be an all Minions movie, fine. This, as a sequel, it's a good children's film. It looks great. These films are really colorful and bright and crisp. And the 3D is used in the way that I like it the best. Mm. The way that makes five-year-olds happy. Stuff's just bouncing, yeah,
shameless
in your face.
Exploitation of the
I
Z-axis.
I don't care about depthy artistic 3D unless we're watching Pina.
Mm.
I want 3D to throw things at me. That's why my favorite 3D films are like these. And
House of Wax.
My Bloody Valentine 3D, where they like throw the axe at you and the guts at you and stuff. Right.
I like the artsy 3D in Life of Pi.
Fine. Yeah, that was great too.
Yeah.
It was.
But no, I hear
so beautiful.
Despicable Me, it is a dog whistle I do not hear. I don't know. I've seen them both now, and I don't really get the appeal. And as you rightly pointed out, I did see both of them at the end of Long Days.
Yes, you did.
So maybe that was the problem. But
yes.
Despicable
Me 2 was the third film we had been to in one day.
Yes. Yes, it was.
Which is not good.
No.
You do not want that ever.
Yeah, I mean, if you're at a film festival and you're really in the zone, and I've seen four
and
or five.
I know we'll have listeners say, I love to go see three movies back to back to back. Well, guess what? You're not paying attention.
Well, you don't have to write them. write about them afterwards.
Yeah. This is the equivalent of going to 3 2-hour staff meetings in a row, where you have to pay attention to every single thing and take notes
and then write a
report about that meeting after.
Or 3 college lectures.
So do that. Do 6 hours of that. And that's how kind of frazzled your brain is.
So
by the end of the time.
My problem with the first movie is that Gru is already kind of a joke before he becomes all nice. Like I never took him all that seriously as a villain. So I felt like...
He was going to steal the moon.
I know, but whatever. It's still just all kind of played kind of wacky. And so in this movie, when he's not villainous...
Because it's supposed to.
I know. But when he's not villainous at all, I was even less interested. And the girls aren't as interesting as they were the first time around.
I'm a little disappointed that the little one, Agnes, wasn't yelling the word fluffy over and over again. Because she did that in the first movie, and that was really delightful.
Yeah, and the oldest daughter, like in this movie, gets all moony-eyed over a boy. And it's just like,
boys are boring.
Yeah, I was not into it.
It's fine. It's nice. I had a good time. It's not as good as the first
one. Yeah, there's nothing objectionable about it.
I'm glad there were more.
If you want to take your kids, if they were fans of the first one, fine.
I'm glad there were lots of Minions to pick up the slack.
Sure. But yeah.
They're great.
Whatever. Okay.
Kevin Hart. Colon.
Let me explain.
Is very, 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 very short.
Yes. Just like Kevin Hart.
It is a little over 1 hour long.
Yeah. And it's not you're not even getting an hour of solid performance. Because
right.
First you have to sit through 2 really terrible intros. First of all, you're at a party in New York. And Kevin Hart is throwing this bash. And people keep coming up to him and saying things like, is it true you aren't talking to your father? And is it true you don't date dark-skinned women? And he's like, what? And he gets all mad and he finally says, I've got to explain. I'm going to go to Madison Square Garden and explain all
this.
And
here's the thing. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care what kind of women you date, and I don't care what your situation is with your dad.
And it's a good,
I do not
it's
care.
A good thing, too, because he neither discusses his father nor dark-skinned women in his comedy.
That is true.
So I don't even get what the point of that was.
So you got 15 minutes infomercial.
So first you get that.
Yeah.
Then you get the infomercial, which is, okay, if you saw the Katy Perry...
Oh, I'm talking about the sketch and the thing you're about to talk about.
Okay.
It's all one big infomercial.
Yeah, totally,
yeah.
Sure. If you saw the Katy Perry movie or the Justin Bieber movie or the, like Dave and I did, the Celine Dion movie.
Which is the best. The Celine Dion.
Celine Dion: Through the Eyes of the World.
I'm not joking. Y'all watch that movie.
It's pretty great.
Because it will blow your mind. She's a thing that you cannot stop looking at.
And the Bieber movie totally steals the third act of the Celine Dion movie with the whole,
Bieber rips
my
off.
Throat, and they go to the same, like, otolaryngologist, whatever, in New York.
Otolaryngologist?
Something like that.
Is that what they call that?
I'm not sure.
Family of Doctors guy?
And they both movies have the thing where the doctor sends a little camera down their throat so you can see their
both of their uvulas.
Their uvula, exactly. In full, in screen-filling close-up. Anyway, in those movies, there's a kind of similar structure where they're on, the artist is on tour, and so you see them singing a song, and then the fans go crazy, and the fans get interviewed and talk about, oh my God, we love you, ah! And then you see the artist backstage, and they're clowning around with their entourage, and they're on right. the bus, and then you see the cartoon arrow go from one city to the right. next one, and then repeat.
Right.
Okay, well, so in this movie, because it's one Kevin Hart performance and not Kevin Hart's world tour, they give you all that in-between stuff crammed at the beginning. So, okay, we start in Canada. Thank you, good night! Fans go crazy! Kevin and his friends backstage. Cartoon arrow. Thank you, good night!
He does this like nine times in a row.
It's like, yeah. And you're thinking, when does this movie start? Now, when it does...
Hooray, Spirit was born. Now the movie can begin. Was that Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Some little kid had a screening of that after, like, the movie's on for like 20 minutes, and then Spirit is finally full. And the kid's like, oh, Spirit got bored. Now the movie can start.
So, yeah, so once Spirit gets born, Hart takes the stage at Madison Square Garden, and he's funny, and he's a very funny comedian.
I think he's really funny.
I had never seen his stand-up before.
He makes me laugh a lot.
You know, I liked him in Think Like
Robert
a Man.
Robert is shaking his head no.
Really?
Seriously, 30 minutes of Women Be Crazy comedy that, like, is really, like, and also Women Be Crazy, when he's talking about women... who are making stuff up, and yet he admits that, like, he's cheated on his wife,
yeah.
and that men do these things that women are supposedly crazy about, but for some reason it's okay to laugh at the women for being crazy about it. That stuff just bugs the crap out of me.
But he also makes himself the butt of the joke about the whole lying to women lying to women well.
No, he doesn't. You are looking to laugh at that then. It's only funny when he gets to the bum. That was funny.
The bum touch. Bum touch. Yeah.
I thought the stand-up part was okay, but maybe it was just because by that point...
I like the Women Be Crazy.
They had made me wait for it so long.
Because I don't know about his personal life, and I don't care.
You don't have to know about his personal life. Yeah. You just have to know that the guy's just basically saying, women are crazy for thinking that men want to cheat on them when they do.
Anyway.
I still laughed.
And I'm out.
I thought it was funny, but I just was so annoyed, A, that it took so long to get there, and then B, it's over so fast. Like, you know, if I had paid $15 to see this movie, I would feel shortchanged.
No pun intended.
Yeah, exactly.
He's 5'2".
Apparently so.
He's 5'2". I know people who are shorter than that, though. So he's not even the shortest person I've ever met in my life. Yeah.
I think there's, you know, he seems natural on stage.
He's great in Think Like a Man.
He's very funny in Think Like
a Man.
Did
you see Think Like a Man?
Yes, yeah. He is a funny comic actor. And yeah. Actually, he's funny in earlier specials he's done.
Okay, and Real Husbands of Hollywood is funny.
Yeah.
On BET. But yeah, so this movie is sort of, well, it's either a sexist farrago, depending on
why,
or it's at least just kind of too short.
In my notes,
not nearly enough.
In my notes I have written down... N-word.
Oh,
you asked me to write that
that's
down.
That's because I had a commenter on the rap complained that in my review I did not take him to task for his overuse of the N-word. To which I have two responses. One, I don't think critics are in the business of telling comedians what they can and can't say.
Absolutely not.
And two, I don't think white critics are ever in a position where they can call anybody out for however often or in what way they use the N-word. Or at least, white critics are no place to go after African Americans.
Talk to a black comic.
On that subject.
Yeah, you're going to tell a black comic he can't say that?
Yeah.
That's
not happening.
Tell him that.
That is not happening.
You want someone to tell him that, just... bring Oprah to the
show. Exactly. Oprah.
She'll tell him.
Oprah will be the first in line to
She did that. My favorite, one of my very, it is maybe my favorite episode.
To Ludacris?
Of Oprah when the cast of Crash was on. And she scolded Terrence Howard on camera when he admitted that his white best friend calls him the N-word. And they think it's hilarious. And they do it back and forth.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Oprah was not having that. And then she
was Oprah also mad at Terrence Howard for insisting that women use baby wipes?
That was pre-baby wipes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was before baby wipes. Look up Terrence Howard.
Google
Terrence Howard and baby wipes.
Yeah, Marky's making a face. He gave an interview in which he said that women, if they were going to get with him, they had to use baby wipes.
I think that's fantastic. I was interviewing him, I would be like, tell me more. That's super crazy.
And then she scolded Ludacris.
Yes.
For not just the N-word, but for all the words that he uses on his albums.
Yeah.
Yeah. So much so that
you need to get new words, Ludacris.
When he won the Grammy, she was the first person he thanked. I'm not making that up.
Well, did he take her advice, or was it like...
I don't know. He said, like
checking Oprah Grammy.
He said, thank you, Oprah. Like, he actually did that at the Grammys.
I think everybody should say that whenever they win any award. If I ever get, you know, if we ever win a podcasting award, and it's one of those things where you have to have...
I think it's hilarious that you just even said that.
I'm trying to come up with a for instance. You know, one of those things where you had to...
A for instance that can happen on planet Earth?
Yes, well, you know, or in the bizarro planet Earth. But, you know, there are some of those online awards where they
is anyone listening in charge of a podcasting award? Because if you are, I think you should seriously consider...
For your consideration.
Us. For your consideration, this.
There's
what's happening right here.
There's some online award, like the Webby or something, where you have a six-word acceptance thank you speech, I think. Like, that's the rule, so they can keep the evening short. So I think we would just say thank you, Oprah, twice.
I know who killed me. That's five.
Oprah!
I know who killed me, Oprah. That's... When people ask me to sign their book, when people ask me to sign my book for them, I always write, I know who killed me.
Yeah. Well, you used to write Babies Making Babies.
I used to write Babies Making Babies, but that was only for 06.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, that was Aaron. When I needed something to sign in books, I asked Aaron. And I said, what should I write in people's books? He goes, Babies Making Babies, 06. And I said, all right.
It's an R. Kelly reference.
I started doing it, and it baffled and confused all the people that I did it to. But they just thought it was great. Like, I'd sent them a mystery message. And I will always consult my friend, Aaron Aldericio, anytime I need to write in someone's book.
Marg is making baffled face, so explain Babies Making Babies.
No, I know, he just explained it. He just explained it.
It's nothing. It's
Oh, I thought it was like it was from a song.
Or it may be from an R.
I thought
Kelly
it was like an R. Kelly song.
It could may very well be from an R. Kelly song. Okay. Who knows? All right. The Way Back.
The Way Way Back. The directorial debut of Nat Faxon and Jim Rash, who won an Oscar as co-writers of The Descendants, and... Rash is on Community, and Faxon had a show last year called Ben and Kate, but for us, they will always be the guys in Beverly Winwood Presents the Actors Showcase, doing the scene from Jeffrey and using the term hive positive. Beverly Winwood is this thing they do in Los Angeles every so often. It's a bunch of groundlings for the most part, and the premise is that everyone in the audience is they're all casting agents or directors, and we're watching an actor showcase from a really terrible acting school, and so improv comedians are playing these terrible would-be actors, and Rash and Faxon did several that were really funny, but the one that always sticks with me is when they do Jeffrey and say
scene from Jeffrey.
High positive.
Yeah.
So it is a That Summer That Changed Everything movie about a teenage boy.
Because we needed more of those.
Who spends a summer with his mother and his mother's obnoxious boyfriend. The mother is Toni Collette. The obnoxious boyfriend is Steve Carell. Who plays the kid? I should know
Liam
this.
Liam something.
He's good.
He's been in a bunch of stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And he winds up getting a job at a local water slide that is managed by Sam Rockwell. And Sam Rockwell is basically playing Bill Murray in Meatballs. As the mentor to the sort of shy and awkward kid.
A little darker than Bill Murray, but not by much.
Not by much.
Yeah.
And it's got a great cast. Maya Rudolph is in it, and Allison Janney, and Anna Sophia Robb. And Rash and Faxon have some fun supporting bits. It's a charming film, and it's sweet, and it's funny. It's not groundbreaking in any way, but it is clever enough that even though you know exactly where it's going to go, you enjoy...
Oops. So
There goes our award.
Sorry. Sorry about that.
You blew it.
Meg Ryan interrupted our podcast.
Yeah, see, that's why we have to have a video podcast, so people can see you do the Meg Ryan typing in You've Got Mail.
I'm so good at impersonating her in that
really
film.
Have that nailed, but it's a visual.
I am the best. If there were contests about who could impersonate Meg Ryan typing in You've Got Mail, I would win the contest.
It's a visual. Mark, you
are you taking
video?
No, just do it. Yeah, right now.
Okay, well, here's how you do it. Okay. You're going to be Meg Ryan and You've Got Mail. You do it like this. You go.
And then victory send.
Send.
Yay!
Yeah.
We'll see if we can get that posted.
No. That's not no.
Oh, is that for private viewing only?
No, it's private viewing only. Well,
you have to share your gift with the world.
We can have a contest.
I will determine if that gets...
All right.
I will watch it, and then I will determine if it goes.
You can't hide
anywhere.
Your light under a bushel.
Yes, I can.
Anyway.
I made a career out of that.
Way, way back. I was charmed by it. I really enjoyed it. You know, I think for what it is, it's perfectly fine, and I will be curious to see what these guys do next, both as writers and as directors.
I laughed a lot, and I have already forgotten it.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
I wrote my review, and then I was done thinking about it, and it evaporated from my head.
It doesn't have any secret, hidden, deeper meanings in any way.
The kid was good.
But it's perfectly entertaining.
It's kind of lovable. It's loose. It doesn't, you know, boom, 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 the whole film.
Right.
It allows for a little more quiet, mm-hmm. I think, than a lot of films like that would.
It's better than The Kings of Summer, which I also like. But I think
it's better than The Kings of Summer.
It's a smarter movie.
Now that I've, you know, seen it and written the review and it's already posted and everything, I am feeling like it might be a touch more sitcom-y than it might honestly should have been, but I'm not gonna have a big argument with anybody about it. So, because I don't care enough about it,
right?
It's just nice.
Yeah,
yeah. Here's what's not nice: Hammer of the Gods.
Right. Which you, by the way, you Dave White has still not watched Maniac. It's still
sitting in TiVo,
it's eating
I'll
up
get
space
to it.
In our TiVo.
You know what's eating up space in our TiVo?
What?
All of your appearances on television that you've saved indefinitely with the green dot on the TiVo.
Oh, I see.
There's a raft of those.
I should be just throwing that out then. Is that what you're saying?
Who you watching it over and over every day?
No.
Are you like
when you're not home? Yes, yeah, it's all I do.
Well,
just watch it.
You know why is it there?
I should put it on DVD or something. I guess I need to build a reel. Okay.
All right. Do it. What's the mechanism for doing that? Go know. Do it.
All right.
But holy balls, we've got like.
Why are you bringing this up to the first time now? In front of a microphone. Why did we never have this conversation at home?
You brought up T-Bone about something that's been sitting there for a long time.
Fine. Just watch Maniac.
You started it.
The listeners are dying to know.
I'm a finish it right here.
Listeners are dying to know what you thought of Maniac, and you're letting them down.
I know they are, and I promise both of you that I'm going to deal with this in time.
And I haven't been on TV that much. Don't exaggerate.
You've been on TV... enough times that we've got a good dozen or more things stuck in the TiVo of you talking to somebody on a news channel or TCM or wherever the hell it was you were. We got your episode of Jeopardy still in there. We got a lot of things.
I'll get rid of them.
Don't get rid of them. Archive them.
I'll
make
save
that
them
reel.
Somewhere. Yeah.
Get one of our editor friends who helps you make clip reels for your books. You know, what, Dave Kittredge, he did that for you. Did they help him make, get a reel so that all you can get a job that pays us some better money. It'll be fantastic when that happens.
Yeah, I can't, I'm not swimming in those waters.
Okay, so Hammer of the Gods
is
a British movie about Vikings.
Mm-hmm.
It stars a guy who was in all of the Twilight movies, but he was just one of the the supporting dudes that maybe had like a line.
It's not Cam Gigandet, is it?
No, because that would be a cause for celebration.
It's Cam Gigandet. You
know. Gigandet. I think you know how to pronounce his last name.
Gigandet.
Yeah. When Cam Gigandet is in a movie, that's a movie that we have a lot to talk about.
Yes.
Because he's never in anything good ever in his entire career. So I appreciate the appearance of Cam Gigandet in a film.
He's a barometer.
Because I know what's coming.
He is the turtle's egg
blindsided me. This movie blindsided me because I'm approaching a film like this. It's called Hammer of the Gods. Mm-hmm. First of all,
breezy like Sunday morning.
What just happened?
That's so
sure.
Where did that happen?
Oh, sorry. That's
what's going on.
Sorry. Okay, sorry. That was my fault. I thought I had erased a previous thing, and then I hadn't. And
so. Oh, you don't have to make excuses for me. Just to let everyone know that I'm handling the technical aspects of this podcast.
Wait. Stop. Okay. Sorry. It's new computer. Things are.
I'm so sorry.
Are we on? Are we back on?
We're back on.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Okay.
You're ruining everything.
I know. Sorry.
If I were the one handling the board and making all the buttons go,
mm-hmm.
This would be much different.
Yeah. When will that day ever happen?
It's going to be smooth sailing when I take over.
Uh-huh, right, Venus flytrap. Okay, Hammer of the Gods.
Well, first of all, it's a Hammer of the Gods. Right. You know, it's Led Zeppelin title, and you're automatically thinking metal because it's the Vikings and the killing and the. And it's not those things. I mean, there's killing, but not enough killing. Let me say it differently.
I was waiting for that explanation.
I want, in a Viking movie,
mm-hmm.
I want to feel like I'm listening to really brutal music.
Okay. Not like you're literally listening to it, but it's the same feeling.
I want that feeling, okay? Yeah. I want cruddy exploitation, blood and guts, and I want anti-moral slaughter.
Uh-huh.
Vikings were not nice. They did things. And so in your film, I want there to be that point of impact, gut ripping.
Mm.
You owe me that, Viking movie.
You don't want a Viking rom-com.
Correct. This is a boring Viking movie. Mm. The premise is that the one Viking guy has to go find his long-lost brother because their father, the king, is dying. And the only one who can really battle the Saxons is the brother who's long lost. In order to find the brother, the Viking guy has to battle all the Saxons.
Thus defeating the purpose.
Every 15 minutes or so, there's a battle that's not very interesting because you never see much.
Mm.
And they sit around and mumble, talk about stuff. And then it's kind of a road movie. They're on the trail of the brother,
and then they eat herring.
They get to a new battle and they battle and they sit and talk about it some more. And
they rap and share their feelings.
Is it mumble bore?
Mumble bore. You know, they run into Ivar the Boneless, legendary Norse berserker,
now available at KFC.
Yeah. And, you know, they portray him as this fat pedophile who's easily killed. No, he's Ivar the Boneless, legendary Norse berserker. You don't just kill him easily, but they do.
Famous people so rarely live up to their...
You know. Look, I want a Viking movie to be a Viking movie. Here's its worst sin. Getting back to the subject of metal,
mm-hmm.
which is inextricably linked to Vikings.
Vikings were known for their thrashy guitars.
That's correct. During these Viking battles,
mm-hmm.
what kind of music do you think should be playing?
Pan flute.
Ron, what other kind of... Margie, what kind of music do you think should be playing during a Viking battle?
Smooth jazz.
Ron, Robert, what kind of Viking music should be playing during a Viking battle?
Chamber strings.
Wrong for a third time.
Bossa Nova?
Eamon Amarth.
And what movie is playing during the battle?
What music is playing?
What music is, yes.
Dubstep.
Nuh-uh.
I'm not lying.
Can you imagine? That's kind of weird.
Dubstep.
How does Christina Applegate explain dubstep on Up All Night?
And then the beat drops. Yeah. Seriously, it's whoop, 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 whoop. During the Viking battle.
Raving Vikings.
All because they just wanted to pay some guy some cheap amount of money to do a score. And like, oh, make something dubsteppy happen during the battle.
The kids like that.
The kids love dubstep. No. You know what the kids love during a Viking battle?
Eamon Amarth.
Eamon Amarth. True Viking metal.
Alrighty then.
So this is a terrible movie.
Mm.
Worse than The Lone Ranger. Not even entertaining for all the reasons a Viking... crappy Viking movie should be entertaining.
Right.
Gore and blood and stabbings and beheadings and killings and dismemberings and every other kind of, you know, things. Brutality. If you're not going to give me that and you're giving me a story that doesn't make any sense and there aren't even going to be any famous people, why isn't Judi Dench playing like the Queen of the Vikings in this film and slaughtering people?
I'm sure
you could have given me that.
She's busy doing a Reddick sequel.
I would have been happy the same way I would have been happy if she would star in a Hostel sequel.
Did you like Valhalla Rising, the Nicholas
yes.
movie?
Here's funny you should bring that up, Robert. The very last thing I say in my review on movies.com
Drink.
Of Hammer of the Gods is make sure when you're making a crappy Viking movie like this to instill nagging disappointment in your audience. So that they spend the last hour of the film's 100 minutes craving the sweet, weird embrace of Valhalla Rising, the very movie they will rewatch later to put the taste of metallic blood back into their thirsty mouths. Valhalla Rising, everybody. That's the film you want to watch. Also, Centurion. That's a good Viking movie.
All right.
That's crazy as F, that movie. You watch that movie. They'll kill you. They all kill each other in that movie. Watch them. Do not watch Hammer of the Gods. You're going to be very sorry. The end.
You heard it here. Okay. DVD.
This week, two excellent DVDs are going to emerge into the retail space. One of them is Spring Breakers.
Woo!
Along with Upstream Color, the only two American films that have been made this year that are actually important.
Francis Ha?
The only two.
Oh, fine.
And then also the other film that comes out on DVD this week.
And also an important American film.
Also an important American film for an entirely different set of reasons. Tyler Perry's Temptation, Confessions of a Marriage Counselor, a.k.a. Tyler Perry's Girl, You Got Some AIDS.
If you missed our review of that one...
You should go back and listen to that episode, because I'm not going to repeat it all for you. But it is the most brain-stabbing film of 2013.
Mm.
It's a Viking film.
It is a spiritual Viking film.
It Vikings the audience.
It Vikings you. Yes, in fact, it does. It Vikings you to the sweet music of Brandy Norwood. Tell me what your DVD recommendations are, Alonzo.
Well, I'm just doing one. The whole Despicable Me 2 thing got me thinking about movies that... animated films that I like that never quite got the love from either critics or audiences that I thought would be worth... people should check out. And I selected Teacher's Pet, which is a Disney film based on the... I think it was a cartoon TV series they did, based on the illustrations of Gary Baseman, who is currently having an exhibition here in Los Angeles at the Skirball Center. It's a very funny movie, and it's eccentric, and it's cool to look at, and it really kind of came and went without much notice. I think people just thought it was another sort of shabby, you know, feature length version of a TV show from the, you know, the Disney TV branch. But it's a lot of fun, and I think people should check it out.
Letters.
Go for it.
This is from Eric. Subject line, Marnie Nixon. Yes, of course, she's still alive.
I told you.
I got to meet her a couple of years ago. My friend Amber gave a cabaret. Do you give a cabaret?
Do you throw a cabaret?
Do you toss a cabaret?
No.
Do you present a cabaret?
I think you heard a cabaret.
You heard a cabaret? It says, my friend Amber gave a cabaret.
Okay.
All right. And when we came out to the bar part of Don't Tell, and when we came out to the bar part of Don't Tell Mamas
in New York,
or here, who knows?
Oh, that's true. Yeah, we have a Don't Tell Mama in West Hollywood now. I forget.
Yeah. To give her kudos afterwards, she was talking to a little old lady, Marnie Nixon! ! And introduced me. Apparently, they are sorority sisters. Which then gave me the pleasure when Charles came up behind me to turn around and say, Charles, this is Marnie Nixon, you know, like she was just anybody. You reminded me, with all that long last love stuff, that I think I can finally get a copy of a movie that probably most people think is pretty dreadful and was not available on DVD until recently as one of those on-demand type of DVDs, The Competition with Amy Irving and Richard Dreyfuss. It came out.
I love a piano.
It came out at a time when a bunch of us were really starting to get serious about being classical musicians, so we fell for it in a big way. Amy Irving is adorable in it, and Lee Remick is fabulous. Dreyfuss plays kind of a prick, and he doesn't look like he's acting very much. Anyway, happy birthday, Dave. So this letter is like about a month old. So, Eric. Thank you, Eric.
Is it a murder of cabarets? Is
that I was thinking that too.
A bunch of cabarets
was it, are? Was it
a gloom of cabarets?
Was it Pauline Kael who took, who made The Competition?
The Competition?
I think it was Pauline Kael who took the filmmaker to task for filming Amy Irving like she looked like, made her look like a potato or something. It's like nobody could withstand the harsh light of how she was filmed.
Oh no, I'll have to look it up.
Here's a letter that sounds like we already maybe wrote it once. Is the character of Ross based on you in Screening Party? Did we address this?
No, we haven't talked about that.
Okay.
You and I talked about it, but we haven't read it on
that. Okay. This is from Reese in Dallas. Hey, Dave and Alonzo, I have recently purchased Dennis Hensley's book Screening Party, and I have a question about your involvement. Is the character of Ross based on both of you? Alonzo was on the cover of the book, but Ross's love of opera makes it seem as if it might be an amalgamation of you two. The book was discussed a few podcasts ago, and I love the Comedy Couch podcast with Dennis and Tony, so I had to purchase the book. It is my ritual to listen to you both while I clean the house, and my house sparkles because of this podcast. Keep up the great work. The character of Ross in Screening Party
reading it this week.
Is based on a lot of different things said by a lot of different people, but actually there are elements of me, there are elements of Alonzo, there are elements of Robert Abley right here sitting next to us.
The heterosexual part.
Yeah.
The heterosexual
and so there are things, we've talked about this before, there are things that I said to Dennis during those screening parties that came out of other characters' mouths.
Yeah, there's stuff that I said that was too gay for Ross to say that the women then got to say. But Robert reads Ross in the audiobook version.
Yes.
That character, I mean, and Robert actually was doing the screening parties while you and I were still living in Dallas.
Yes.
So we were not around for Jaws and some of the early ones. So yeah, so Ross is an amalgam of a lot of things and a lot of people, but mainly of the three of us.
Yeah, okay, kind of, sure. So, yeah. Sure, whatever.
We are so, all Ross under one roof.
Now here's a long one. The last one I'm going to read is a long one from last week that I did not read. Dear Dave and Alonzo, just wanted to let you know that I'm a big fan of the podcast and check it out regularly. I like to try out other movie-related podcasts. Why? Quit it.
But as long as they always read us.
But Linoleum Knife is one of my favorites because you two have a great rapport.
Yay.
And possess an expansive knowledge of film. Alonso possesses an expansive knowledge of film. I possess pizzazz.
You know your stuff.
Plus, I also like that you play interesting music at the beginning and do DVD picks. I have several friends who love watching movies, but only a few who are truly passionate about film. So when I discover someone who enjoys foreign or obscure titles, I cherish the conversations. Or in the case of the podcast, just listening to others talk. It was actually Jeremy, whose email you read on the Olympus Has Fallen episode, who introduced me to Linoleum Knife.
See, word of mouth. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Jeremy.
I tend to be behind schedule in listening to the podcast, though, because I like to listen after I've seen most of the movies you discuss.
Okay.
This is because sometimes the two of you reveal a lot of information about the plot and or characters. This is not so much a criticism as it is an observation, partly because my desire is to know little about a film before I see it during this day and age of trailers that divulge the entire story. Amen about that.
Totally.
And also because on occasion you give away too much.
Sorry.
Having said that, you're usually good about warning us. I noticed that when only one of you has seen a movie, there is less of a desire to go into detail. I had thought about sending you my top 10 list, but then reconsidered as I already know how you both feel about several of the titles. While I'm tempted to launch into a debate about Shawshank Redemption, we will just have to agree to disagree.
Fair enough.
Even so, since Alonzo is the more vocal opponent of it, I've only bought Dave's book so far. LOL.
Fine.
I won.
You can
that one.
Curl up with Exile in Guyville and Shawshank Redemption.
So to shake things up a bit, I'm just going to give you a list in no particular order of films scattered throughout my top 100.
Boo.
Should I have a top 100?
I'm feeling remiss now that I don't have one either.
I think it's too hard to have even a top 10. It's just too hard.
I don't like making any kind of list. Like, we were just asked to make our list of our favorite films of the 80s for another guy on his website, and that just felt very problematic.
Well,
as for the Goonies, what do you put?
As with any list, it's like, well, these are my top 10 today. You know, check right. with me next week. And you know,
I have a question. Speaking of rapport, which one of you is Ginger Rogers and which one of you is Fred Astaire?
I'm,
considering the adage about them that...
I'm Edward Everett Horton.
And I'm the guy in The Gays All Here. I'm the guy in The Lady Eve yelling, where's my breakfast? And
Dave is Eugene Paulette.
I'm Eugene Paulette, yes.
Go on.
Sleuth, 1972.
Okay, guess it, not the remake. Good, yes. Okay, love it.
Blow, from 2001.
Never seen it.
It's fine.
Okay. That's what I've always heard. It's like...
The Game.
I need to see, and I've not.
Okay, here's a real weird coincidence. The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance.
That is really weird.
Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Okay.
C-R-A-Z-Y.
Yes.
Which I never saw.
Yeah.
Canadian
gay film.
Oh, you'll like this one.
Uh-huh.
The 1995 Les Miserables.
Oh. Tears me up.
It does. Makes you cry, cry, cry.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's set during World War II.
Yeah.
It's not a musical.
No.
It's based on the book.
Ish.
Yeah.
Needs to be on DVD.
Yeah, never been released on DVD in the U.S.
Yeah.
He says it is the best adaptation of the book.
I concur.
Mon Oncle Antoine.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah. Papillon, 1973.
Oh, good one, yeah.
Pinocchio. Terrific.
The Disney one and not the Roberto Benigni.
The Roberto Benigni one. No, of course the Disney one.
I can't get my thumb on what the tape... I can't imagine who this person is.
Well, this is from his top 100, okay.
Here, you want some extras? He's got some extras.
Oh, by all means.
Sancho the Bailiff.
Okay.
A Brighter Summer Day.
Don't know that one.
Witness for the Prosecution.
Oh, great.
On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
My favorite.
Undersung.
Napoleon.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow.
Keep up the good work, guys, and I leave you with a quote. You're 100% knife.
Sure, totally.
Yeah. And I leave you with a quote. Remember, Alonzo, hope is a good thing, maybe even the best of things, and no good thing ever dies. I hope this letter finds you and bites you well. Take care, Chad.
Thanks, Morgan Freeman, Chad.
Hey. We're done.
All right, excellent. Well, we thank you for listening. We thank Robert and Margie for being such swell hosts. and having us in their lovely home today. And as always, we remind you to check out our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli, Cooking with Malcolm.
If they ever do another one.
Yeah, well, you know, it's things are crazy right now. Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack. Jack, by the way, this week goes on this lengthy riff at the end of the show about the Pirates of the Caribbean movies that is hilarious. So
all right.
You should check that one
I
out.
I will check that
on
out.
Team Jack. Yeah. The Schmoes Know, the B-Movies Podcast. Again, do check out this week's episode. Dave and I are there for it. You like our episodes long. We do 2 hours with them.
No.
Yes.
Really?
Almost 2 hours.
I don't
talking
think
about,
it's 2 hours.
It is. No. I listened to it.
I don't know about that.
I listened to it on the thing. It's
I
2 hours.
To it
it's
as
like
well.
An hour 57 or something.
How long is this?
We're coming about an hour 12 or so.
Yeah.
So yeah, we did a solid 2 hours talking about our favorite films of the decade so far. Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash with Chris Gore, The Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this program for free at iTunes, and if you want to leave us a positive review there, that would be great. It helps people find the show. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. Please like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. Check into the show at getglue.com and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com.
Let us
know your top 10 list, your bottom 10, your thoughts,
your
questions,
sideways 10.
Your sideways 10. Your also, what? 10.
Coming soon. Very soon.
Mm.
Linoleumknife.com.
Yeah, linoleum-knife.
Linoleum-knife.com.
Yes.
We are going to have our own site.
Mm-hmm.
It will host this show.
And it will feature...
It will link you to our reviews for The Wrap and for movies.com.
Mm-hmm.
It will have...
Original
content, reviews of films that we do not review for our own site,
mm-hmm.
Articles and things to look at and watch and stuff.
Yes.
And things that are for sale. And it's happening.
Yes.
There's going to be a bare bones version of it, lovingly constructed by a friend of ours who... has worked for free, and we owe him many debts.
And it will grow and expand and be all kinds of.
But it's coming very,
things.
Very, very soon.
Yes.
Ready for that.
And one
it's
last
got a dash in the middle of the name.
Right. One last thing: if you are in Los Angeles, Outfest is coming up. I am their senior programmer, and it's a really strong set of films this year. It runs July 11th through the 21st in Los Angeles. You can go to outfest.org. Oh, nice one, Dave White.
I just hit my microphone with a DVD.
Yeah.
On accident.
Classy.
Sorry.
You can go to outfest.org for tickets, for information about screenings. I definitely would point people to 2 panels that I've curated for the weekend of July 12th. One of them is an animation panel featuring our friend Dean DeBlois, who is the director of the upcoming How to Train Your Dragon 2 and the co-director of How to Train Your Dragon and Lilo and Stitch, and also producer Suzanne Berge and former studio exec Kevin Bannerman, among other folks. And also a horror panel featuring Brian Fuller, the creator of Hannibal and Mockingbird Lane, Kimberly Pierce, the director of this fall's remake of Carrie, and Gregory Reddick, who is one of the architects of the Final Destination series. So if you were a genre fan, this is all happening the weekend before Comic-Con, so we don't overlap, you should come check those out.
Yes.
And so until next time, we thank you for listening.
Goodbye.